Audio Companion, The Full Manifesto, Part 2 of 2. Before we begin, one note about this recording. Source citations are not read aloud here. Every number in this document is traced to a public source in the written version at wethepeopleplatform.com, where you can check any of it yourself. Nothing has been removed from the argument itself, where the platform is uncertain, or where a claim still needs outside expert review. This recording says so, exactly as the written document does. This is part 2 of 2, continuing from Pillar 8. Pillar 8. Universal Paid Family Time. The 8th pillar provides federal paid leave for parental, caregiver, and personal medical circumstances. The United States is one of very few developed nations without a federal paid family leave commitment. Existing federal law provides only unpaid leave to a subset of workers. Pillar 8 closes this gap through a dedicated federal program providing wage replacement during qualifying leave events, parental leave following birth, adoption, or foster placement, caregiver leave for serious illness of a family member, and personal medical leave for the worker's own serious health condition. Each leave category is up to 12 weeks per qualifying event. Historical precedent. The Family and Medical Leave Act and state paid leave programs. The architectural logic underlying universal paid family time has direct American precedent in the Family and Medical Leave Act of 1993, which established federal unpaid family leave for approximately 60% of the U.S. workforce, allowing up to 12 weeks of job-protected leave for childbirth, family illness, or personal medical circumstances, and in the state-level paid family leave programs that have emerged across the United States since 2002. California, 2002. The first state paid leave program, currently funded through a 1.1% payroll contribution covering 8 weeks of paid leave at up to 70% of wages. New Jersey, 2009. Rhode Island, 2013. New York, 2018. Washington, 2020. Massachusetts, 2021. Connecticut, 2022. And a growing list. The state programs have collectively demonstrated for two decades that payroll-funded paid family leave is administratively feasible and politically sustainable. Universal paid family time extends the FMLA's federal policy architecture, job protection during family leave, with the state program's funding architecture, dedicated payroll contribution funding paid leave, and universalizes the result. The architectural pieces exist already. FMLA's federal framework, the state program's funding mechanism, and decades of administrative experience showing the model works. The platform extends and unifies them into the universal federally administered paid family leave that the FMLA opened the door to in 1993 and that the state programs have validated since 2002. The program is funded through a dedicated payroll contribution at approximately 0.4% of covered wages, split as 0.25% employer/0.15% employee, following the platform's standard contribution convention in which the employer share is the larger of the two. Self-employed workers pay the combined rate on net self-employment income with the standard deductibility treatment. Annual program cost at maturity is approximately $40 to $60 billion per year, calibrated to the contribution rate. Several states have implemented their own paid family leave programs and continue to do so. Pillar 8 operates as a federal floor, with state programs continuing to provide benefits above the federal minimum. Pillar 8 complements existing platform commitments. Universal child care addresses care during the working period after parental leave. Pillar 8 addresses the leave period itself. Universal health care addresses medical treatment cost during personal medical events. Pillar 8 addresses lost wage replacement during recovery. The aging in place implications and multigenerational households documents had identified the informal caregiver wage replacement gap as an unaddressed platform concern. Pillar 8 closes that gap. Pillar 9. Universal long-term care. Long-term care is the platform's 9th pillar, added in version 3.3.0 to address the visible gap in the platform's prior architecture. Approximately 15 million Americans currently need long-term services and supports. The number is projected to grow as the baby boomer cohort ages into 75 and older. Long-term care expenditures total approximately $475 billion per year in formal spending, with unpaid family caregiving valued at approximately $600 billion on top of that. Most Americans become eligible for Medicaid long-term care benefits only after spending down their assets to near poverty levels, a structurally cruel feature of the current system that turns aging-related care needs into mandatory impoverishment. Pillar 9 establishes universal access to long-term services and supports through a 1% combined payroll contribution split as 0.6% employer/0.4% employee. The contribution generates approximately $250 billion per year in steady-state revenue. Coverage includes home and community-based services, the platform's preferred default care setting. Institutional care for individuals whose functional limitations cannot safely be supported at home. Adult day services, respite care to support family caregivers, assistive technology and home modifications, and care coordination. Eligibility is based on functional assessment using a standardized instrument. There is no asset spend down, no income test, and no marriage status dependent eligibility rule. The transition occurs over approximately a 15-year horizon, parallel to the transition periods used for Pillar 4 and Pillar 5. Pillar 9 is integrated with Pillar 4, Universal Healthcare Access, for medically coded long-term care, with Pillar 6, Universal Mental Health Access, for individuals with cognitive or psychiatric care components, and with Pillar 8, Universal Paid Family Time, for working-age individuals providing care to family members. Pillar 9 eliminates the Medicaid asset spend-down for long-term care. Existing federal Medicaid LTC expenditures, approximately $200 billion per year, and state-level long-term care expenditures, approximately $120 billion per year, provide substantial offsetting savings as enrollment shifts to the new program. The platform's high-earner architecture provides backstop revenue for any residual gap. Pillar 10, Federal Housing Investment Housing, is the platform's 10th pillar, added in version 3.4.0 to address the visible gap in the platform's prior architecture. The United States faces an estimated 4 to 7 million unit shortage in housing supply, concentrated at the affordable rental end of the market. The federal Section 8 Housing Choice Voucher Program serves approximately 5 million households, but has wait lists of 4 to 7 years in most major metropolitan areas. Only roughly one quarter of eligible households actually receive the assistance they qualify for. Pillar 10 closes this gap by elevating federal housing investment to a pillar of the platform alongside healthcare, childcare, mental health, and the others. Pillar 10 differs from the platform's payroll-funded pillars in funding architecture. Housing supply is largely state and local. Rental assistance is geographically variable in cost. The federal role is more about funding and conditioning than direct provision. Pillar 10 therefore uses federal general revenue drawn from the platform's high-earner architecture, graduated income surcharge plus wealth surcharge above 10 million plus wealth tax above 50 million, plus existing federal housing program substitution as the platform displaces the current patchwork. Aggregate commitment at full implementation. Approximately $145 billion per year. Approximately $70 billion absorbed from existing federal housing programs plus approximately $75 billion in net new federal commitment. This makes Pillar 10 parallel to Pillar 1 in funding architecture rather than to Pillars 4 through 6 and 8 through 9. Pillar 10 has five components. First, universal rental assistance for households below approximately 50% of area median income, eliminating the Section 8 waitlist and reaching all eligible households. Estimated cost approximately $70 to $100 billion per year, combining current Section 8 spending with incremental federal commitment. Second, federal-state conditional grants for housing supply expansion, with grant access tied to zoning reform conditions including by-right approval for missing middle housing, density bonuses, and reduced regulatory barriers. Estimated grant flow approximately $10 to $25 billion per year. Third, public housing capital investment of approximately $10 billion per year to address the deferred maintenance backlog and reverse the multi-decade trend of public housing unit loss. Fourth, supportive housing for special populations including chronically homeless individuals, integrated with Pillar 6, mental health, and Pillar 9, long-term care. Estimated cost approximately $5 to $10 billion per year. Fifth, housing first federal funding for state and local homelessness response with evidence-based program designs. Estimated cost approximately $3 to $5 billion per year. The transition is approximately 15 to 20 years, somewhat longer than payroll-funded pillars because housing supply expansion is constrained by construction cycles, zoning reform timelines, and workforce capacity. Pillar 11, Climate Architecture. Climate is the platform's 11th pillar, added in version 3.5.0. The United States emits approximately 5 billion metric tons of CO2, equivalent annually, contributing approximately 15% of global emissions despite housing approximately 4% of global population. Climate change is the largest collective action challenge facing the country and the world. Market signals do not internalize the externalities imposed by greenhouse gas emissions. Voluntary mitigation has proven inadequate at the necessary scale and speed. Existing federal climate policy is a patchwork of subsidies, regulations, and state-level cap-and-trade programs that does not provide an economy-wide price signal. Pillar 11 establishes an economy-wide upstream carbon price applied to fossil fuels at the point of extraction or import, starting at $50 per metric ton CO2, equivalent in year one, and rising to $100 per metric ton over an approximately 10-year transition. Coverage reaches approximately 75 to 80% of U.S. CO2 equivalent emissions. A border adjustment mechanism applies the carbon price to imported goods based on embedded carbon content. Total carbon price revenue at maturity is approximately $300 to $400 billion per year, ramping from approximately $150 to $200 billion per year at the starting price as the price rises and as covered emissions decline due to the price's incentive effect. Revenue is split 50-50 between two principal mechanisms. Half is returned to U.S. residents as an equal per capita carbon dividend, with adjustments for household composition. Each adult receives an equal share. Each child receives a half share capped at 2 children per household. At maturity, the per adult dividend is approximately $600 to $700 per year, with a 4-person household receiving approximately $2,000 per year. The dividend is not means-tested. The carbon price plus dividend distributional effect is progressive on net for households below approximately the 70th percentile of household income. The other half is allocated to clean energy infrastructure investment, approximately 25% of total revenue, transmission grid modernization, approximately 10%, just transition support for fossil fuel-dependent communities and workers, approximately 10%, and clean energy innovation programs, approximately 5%. Pillar 11 differs from pure dividend carbon pricing approaches. The Climate Leadership Council's Carbon Dividends Plan, the Citizens Climate Lobby's Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act. In this hybrid revenue allocation, the architectural choice reflects the platform's view that the price signal is necessary but not sufficient at the scale and speed required by climate science. Pillar 12, Immigration Architecture. Immigration is the platform's 12th and final pillar in the version 4.0.0 architecture proposal sequence, added in version 3.6.0. The U.S. immigration system is foundational infrastructure that affects nearly every other policy domain. Workforce supply across healthcare, agriculture, construction, and technology, fiscal sustainability through social security and tax-based contributions over the long horizon. Housing demand and supply, healthcare workforce capacity, the pipelines into education and civic life. The current system is a decades-long stalemate. Approximately 11 million long-resident undocumented immigrants live in legal limbo with no pathway to status. The asylum case backlog exceeds 3 million cases with 5 to 7 year waits. Legal immigration processing has multi-year delays. Per-country caps produce decades-long waits for some nationalities. The workforce visa system has unfilled categories alongside categories with massive oversubscription. Refugee admissions have been dramatically reduced from historical norms, then partially restored. Integration support is patchwork and underfunded. Pillar 12 is comprehensive immigration reform structured as a coherent policy architecture with 6 components. Pathway to legal status for long-resident undocumented immigrants over a multi-year process with vetting, fees, English language proficiency, and earned naturalization track. Legal immigration modernization, including increased employment-based and family-based allocations and elimination of per-country caps, asylum and refugee processing capacity expansion with backlog elimination. and refugee admissions framework restoration, workforce visa reform across H-1B, H-2A, H-2B, and shortage occupation pathways with new visa categories for healthcare workforce shortages, integration support with federal investment in English language instruction, civic integration, and naturalization preparation, and border management modernization focused on ports of entry where the substantial majority of fentanyl actually enters, with cooperation frameworks with Mexico and Central America. Pillar 12 is funded by federal general revenue, supplemented by user fees that already fund the substantial majority of USCIS operations. Aggregate gross federal commitment at full implementation, approximately $30 to $50 billion per year. Net fiscal impact, positive on the 10 to 20 year horizon. The National Academies of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine 2017 consensus report concluded that immigrants and their descendants are a substantial net fiscal positive over the long horizon. CBO scoring of S.744, 2013 comprehensive reform, projected approximately $1 trillion in deficit reduction over 20 years. Subsequent comparable proposals have produced similar magnitudes. Pillar 12's gross expenditure is more than offset by tax revenue increases over the medium to long horizon. The transition is approximately 15 years. Version 3.6.0 completes the version 4.0.0 architecture proposal sequence. The platform now has its full 12 pillars set in place. How the pillars reinforce each other, each pillar above can be defended on its own merits. What makes the architecture more than the sum of its parts is the way the pillars feed each other. Workers earning wage floor wages contribute meaningfully to the sovereign fund. A worker earning the empirical wage floor for their occupation contributes more to the sovereign fund than a worker earning the current federal minimum wage. The retirement system is funded by the labor system. When the labor system works, the retirement system works. The sovereign fund's growth funds education at maturity. When the retirement fund reaches the scale where small disbursements produce large absolute amounts, education becomes affordable for the next generation. The retirement system funds the education system. The education system produces workers who command wage floor wages. Educated workers are more productive workers, and the wage floor system ensures they are paid for their productivity. The education system funds the labor system. The structure is circular by design. Each pillar produces the resources that the next pillar requires. None of them stand alone. Together, they make a system that compounds over time rather than degrading over time, which is the opposite of what the current structure does. How the platform engages political reality. This platform was not designed to be a partisan instrument. It was designed to address structural problems in American economic life. The retirement security collapse, the wage productivity decoupling, the educational debt crisis, the healthcare cost spiral, the absence of universal childcare, the inadequacy of mental health access, and the underinvestment in civic infrastructure. These problems do not have a political party. Anyone reaching retirement age, anyone working a wage job, anyone with a child in school, and anyone navigating the American healthcare system encounters them, regardless of how they vote. The platform's structural design reflects a deliberate effort to combine features that different political traditions have historically valued. This is not centrism in the sense of splitting differences. It is an attempt to take seriously the legitimate concerns that different traditions raise about social policy and to design an architecture that addresses those concerns rather than dismissing them. A reader from any political tradition will find features that align with their priors and other features that may challenge them. The platform is offered for evaluation on its merits, not on its partisan coding. How the platform engages conservative concerns about social policy. The platform addresses several concerns conservative traditions have historically raised about social policy. On retirement, existing pensioners are explicitly protected with no benefit cuts to current Social Security recipients. Vested rights are preserved, and the new hybrid retirement system features mandatory individual accounts that workers own and that are heritable. Account ownership and inheritance address the concern that traditional Social Security gives workers no asset to pass to heirs. On governance, the Sovereign Investment Fund operates under the Norwegian Government Pension Fund global model with statutory firewalls preventing political direction of investment decisions, addressing the concern that large public funds become politically directed. On taxation, the wage floor exemption replaces the standard deduction in the federal tax architecture, substantially reducing federal tax burden for working-class households, a tax cut for the working class through the federal income tax system. On educational funding, the Sovereign Education Fund delivers per-student dollars that follow the student rather than flowing to institutions, and cost-based pricing prevents institutions from inflating prices when more funding is available. On childcare, the Quebec parental cap model provides parental choice of provider rather than government-operated daycare, addressing the concern that universal childcare means government raising children. On healthcare, the German-style multi-payer system explicitly is not a single-payer Medicare for all design and preserves market competition among insurers, addressing the concern that universal healthcare means single-payer government health insurance. On wage policy, occupation-specific wage floors are set by labor market data, the 25th percentile of actual wages currently paid, recalibrated every 3 years, rather than by legislative negotiation, addressing the concern that minimum wages are set politically without reference to actual market conditions. On fiscal discipline, the platform includes a federal fiscal impact analysis with explicit sensitivity sections for behavioral economics uptake risk, state cooperation refusal risk, and sovereign fund return risk. The combined reform model includes stress testing under 5 adverse scenarios. The platform's commitments are honestly accounted with the trade-offs made explicit. These design choices do not make the platform a conservative project. Its scale, $5.0 trillion in new federal commitments at mature steady state, and its universal architecture mean conservative critics will object on legitimate grounds. But they reflect serious engagement with concerns conservative traditions have historically raised about social policy. Features progressive traditions have historically valued universal access is the architectural commitment. Universal health care for every American regardless of employment status. Universal child care regardless of household income. Universal mental health access regardless of insurance. Universal broadband regardless of geographic location. The Sovereign Education Fund eliminates student debt for new generations through cost-based pricing combined with per-student fund disbursement. The founding stake provides every American newborn with seed capital that compounds for 18 years, building wealth at the population level rather than concentrating it. The civic infrastructure pillar invests substantially in public goods, water and sanitation, energy grid modernization, civic technology, public spaces, journalism. Federal program integration absorbs Medicare and Medicaid working age coverage into a unified universal architecture, expanding rather than contracting federal commitment to American well-being. The wage floor exemption is progressive in distributional effect, with working-class households receiving proportionally larger reductions in federal tax burden than upper-income households. The sovereign fund accumulates approximately $122 trillion in public wealth over 60 years, available for collective benefit rather than concentrated in private hands. The platform's transition design ensures no household is worse off through the refundable transition bridge credit, and explicit attention is given to households that have historically fallen through gaps in social policy. Features moderate and cross-partisan traditions have historically valued the platform deploys over 30 to 60 years rather than producing abrupt structural change. Existing federal programs are largely absorbed and restructured rather than eliminated, preserving institutional knowledge and continuity for the populations those programs serve. Federal-state cooperation is the operating mode rather than federal preemption. States retain meaningful policy choice within the platform's universal commitments. The refundable transition bridge credit ensures that the headline household savings figures are achieved without anyone being made worse off during the transition period. Stress testing under adverse scenarios, including economic stagnation, demographic shock, and compound crises, is built into the foundational analytical work rather than treated as a downstream consideration. The platform addresses fiscal questions explicitly through the federal fiscal impact analysis rather than treating fiscal feasibility as an afterthought. Policy choices are framed as design decisions to be made through ordinary legislative process, with no constitutional reform proposed. These groupings are descriptive, not prescriptive. A reader who identifies with one tradition need not endorse all features in that tradition's column, and the platform's design will face real political opposition from voices within each tradition. Progressive critics may object that the platform is not Medicare for all, does not directly address housing supply or immigration policy, and preserves elements of the existing market-based healthcare system. Conservative critics may object that $5.0 trillion per year in new federal commitments at mature steady state is substantial, that the sovereign investment fund creates an unprecedented federal financial entity, and that universal benefits without work tests change the historical relationship between contribution and entitlement. Moderate critics may object that the platform's deployment timeline is too long for the urgency of present problems, or alternately too compressed for orderly institutional change. The argument here is not that the platform satisfies every political tradition. The argument is that the platform addresses real structural problems with a genuinely cross-cutting design, and that it deserves evaluation on its substantive merits rather than dismissal based on partisan coding. American policy reform is hard precisely because the structural problems require sustained cross-partisan work. The platform is offered as a foundation for that work. A companion document on AI workforce transition, the political reality framing above, engages the platform on the terms it was originally written, a fairness-grounded argument for shared prosperity. A separate companion document, built for what's coming, the platform as AI workforce transition infrastructure, develops the platform's case from a different starting point that does not depend on any commitment to fairness. The argument there is that even a reader whose primary concern is economic stability rather than fairness, who is skeptical of redistributive language and who would prefer to leave market mechanisms in place, has reason to want this architecture in place when AI workforce displacement reshapes the labor market in the coming decade. The platform's AI resilience properties are largely emergent rather than designed. The sovereign wealth fund accumulating to $122 trillion over 60 years provides a buffer against AI displacement income loss. Universal healthcare and childcare access decouple essential security from employment. Wage floors as tax architecture provide a floor that does not depend on labor market conditions. The federal infrastructure fee creates consumer protection that does not require active labor. Force participation. Built for what's coming articulates these properties as a deliberate case for citizens whose values lead with economic stability rather than equity. Both framings are honest. Both are available. Readers can engage with whichever motivates them. How the platform has grown, and what it still does not address honesty about what is not in this document, is as important as clarity about what is. When this manifesto was first written, the platform consisted of three primary pillars: the community contribution plan, empirical wage floors, and the sovereign education fund. Universal healthcare was acknowledged as adjacent, important, solvable, but requiring its own dedicated funding mechanism and institutional design that had not yet been worked out. Since then, that work has been done. The platform now includes universal healthcare as a formally substantiated adjacent pillar, modeled on the German and Japanese multi-payer systems, with universal coverage funded through a 4% employer/2% employee payroll contribution and integration with the existing employer-based system. The substantiation, transition plan, and mathematical model are through 05. Universal healthcare is now part of what the platform proposes. As of version 2.21, the universal healthcare commitment explicitly enumerates its coverage scope: medical care, prescription drugs, mental health treatment under the separate universal mental health access pillar, basic dental, preventive and restorative, cleanings, exams, fillings, extractions, periodontal treatment, at 100% with orthodontic care for children only and cosmetic dentistry excluded, and basic vision, eye examinations and treatment of eye diseases, at 100% with prescription correction covered for children only. Long-term care and hearing aids remain outside the scope and are flagged as honest acknowledged gaps that future platform versions could address. Universal childcare has followed the same path. It was originally acknowledged as adjacent, solvable, with international precedents, Quebec's $10 per day system being the closest model, but requiring distinct analysis and a distinct funding mechanism. That analysis has now been completed. The platform includes universal childcare as a formally substantiated adjacent pillar, funded through a 0.8% employer/0.5% employee payroll contribution. Universal mental health access was added in version 2.2 with similar substantiation, funded through a 0.5% employer/0.3% employee payroll contribution. The three adjacent pillars, healthcare, childcare, mental health, are now part of the platform alongside the original three primary pillars. The total architecture is six pillars plus the civic infrastructure pillar added in version 2.3 for shared physical and digital systems, broadband, transportation, water and sewer, public spaces, civic technology, energy grid. The citizen-facing tax comparison documents reflect this full six-pillar plus infrastructure architecture. Beyond the pillar architecture, the platform's analytical depth has expanded substantially over recent releases to address specific situations the original architecture treated implicitly. The platform now includes detailed analytical work on how the platform interacts with non-nuclear family households, cohabiting unmarried couples, multigenerational households, with workers in non-standard employment relationships, public sector workers under Federal Employees Health Benefits, FEHB, and TRICARE, the early retiree gap, with means-tested federal programs. Section 8 Housing Vouchers, Temporary Assistance for Needy Families, TANF, Cash Assistance, with specific demographic groups, existing pensioners, non-citizens, residents of U.S. territories, older Americans navigating long-term care arrangements, and with foundational implementation challenges, behavioral economics, and uptake friction, federal-state cooperation requirements. This work documents what the platform addresses for these groups, what it does not, and the design choices that remain open. Readers interested in their own situation should consult the relevant analytical framing documents in the package. The table of contents lists each specifically. The 13 specific situations the platform has worked out. The platform package now includes detailed analytical work on 13 specific situations the original architecture treated implicitly. Each is documented in a dedicated analytical framing document with explicit open questions identifying remaining design choices. A reader whose own situation matches any of these should consult the relevant document for situation-specific analysis. Behavioral economics and uptake friction examines the platform's exposure to predictable behavioral friction, how households actually engage with tax architecture, default in mechanisms, and platform programs, and where the platform is architecturally protected versus exposed. State-level cooperation requirements examines federal-state cooperation across the platform's commitments, identifies which programs require state cooperation to deliver fully, and analyzes federal direct fallback options for states that may refuse cooperation, non-citizens, and platform eligibility. Maps the platform's interaction with approximately 47 million non-citizens across lawful permanent residents, work-authorized non-citizens, mixed-status families, and unauthorized residents. Cohabiting unmarried couples examines the platform's treatment of approximately 17 million Americans in cohabiting relationships outside marriage, and how the wage floor architecture and bridge credit handle these households. Public sector worker transitions examines the platform's interaction with approximately 22 million federal, state, and local government employees covered by FEHB, TRICARE, FERS, and various non-Section 218 retirement systems. Existing pensioners and the platform examines the platform's commitments to approximately 75 million Americans receiving retirement income from at least one defined benefit source, Social Security retirees, Social Security disability recipients, state and local government pensioners, federal civilian retirees, and others. Vested rights are preserved. Section 8 Housing and Federal Housing Assistance examines the platform's interaction with approximately 5 million Section 8 voucher households and identifies the apparent rent increase dynamic that universal childcare and universal healthcare create in HUD income calculations. TANF and cash assistance examines the platform's relationship to temporary assistance for needy families and outlines three approaches to TANF restructuring: continued, partially restructured, replaced with refundable family assistance credit. Multigenerational households examines the platform's treatment of approximately 24 million multigenerational households, where adult children live with parents, grandparents raise grandchildren, or three generations share housing. Aging in place implications. Identifies long-term care as the platform's largest single coverage gap and maps the platform against approximately 12 million Americans in CCRCs, assisted living, nursing homes, and HCBS programs, plus approximately 53 million informal caregivers providing $400-500 billion annually in unpaid care. U.S. territories and the platform. Maps the platform against approximately 3.5 to 3.7 million U.S. citizens and U.S. nationals in Puerto Rico, Guam, USVI, the Northern Mariana Islands, and American Samoa, and examines distinctive federal tax structures and the Section 1108 territorial Medicaid funding cap. Climate policy beyond grid modernization. Honest acknowledgement of the platform's largest scope omission. Maps what the civic infrastructure pillar's energy grid modernization commitment addresses versus what the platform omits: carbon pricing, fossil fuel subsidies, environmental justice, climate adaptation, agricultural emissions, building efficiency, gender pay gap, and indirect mechanisms. Examines how the platform's architecture would reduce the raw gender pay gap by an estimated 30 to 40% through three indirect mechanisms: universal childcare addressing the motherhood penalty, empirical wage floors raising pay in female-dominated occupations, universal healthcare reducing job lock. Honestly acknowledges what the platform does not do: paid family leave, pay transparency, salary history bans, strengthened Equal Pay Act enforcement, comparable worth frameworks, and outlines five design directions for future versions. These 13 documents collectively raise approximately 100 explicit open questions documenting design choices that remain unresolved before deployment. The platform does not pretend these questions are settled. A serious reviewer of the platform should engage with the open questions specifically. The platform's deployability depends on resolving them. What the platform now includes, in summary: three primary pillars, community contribution plan, empirical wage floors, sovereign education fund, and nine further pillars: universal healthcare, universal childcare, universal mental health access, civic infrastructure, universal paid family time, universal long-term care, federal housing investment, climate architecture, and immigration architecture. All 12 are substantiated with operational designs, cost models, and transition plans. The remaining items below are what the platform still does not address. This platform does not address criminal justice reform, immigration policy, foreign policy, or environmental policy. These are real and important. They are not what this document is about. A platform that tries to include everything ends up advocating nothing in particular. This platform does not propose disability insurance reform or survivors' benefits reform. These programs serve millions of vulnerable Americans and require continued operation under any reform. They are addressed in the technical white paper, but are not central to the platform vision. This platform does not propose a constitutional convention or any restructuring of the basic forms of American government. The reforms described here can be enacted through ordinary legislation. The architecture works within the existing constitutional structure of the United States. Who this is for this document is written for several audiences. Each will find different things useful. For the general reader, if you are an American citizen who believes the country can be better than it currently is, this document is for you. It does not assume you have a background in economics, policy, or finance. The technical analysis exists. You do not have to read it to understand what is being proposed. What you should take from this document is that the changes described here are possible, that they have been done in other places, and that the math behind them has been worked out carefully enough to deserve serious attention. For policy professionals, if you work in a policy institution, an academic department, a congressional office, or a research organization, this document is your invitation to engage critically with the underlying analysis. The white papers behind it are available on request. The specific limitations and open questions are documented. The author is not credentialed and does not claim to have done institution-grade analysis. The argument is that the structure deserves the institutional analysis that an individual cannot perform alone. For elected officials, if you hold elected office or work for someone who does, This platform is offered as a starting point for the kinds of conversations that have been absent from American political discourse for too long. The proposals here are not finished policy. They are technically defensible structures around which serious legislative work could begin. The author is available to discuss any element of the proposal, to provide the underlying models, and to engage with critique. This document and its supporting analysis are not protected intellectual property. They are offered as a contribution to the work that needs to be done. For other citizens doing this work, if you are doing parallel work, thinking through how American political and economic structures could be reorganized to produce shared prosperity, this document is your invitation to compare notes. The architecture here is not the only possible architecture. Other approaches may be better. The work of making the country better is not a competition. It is a collaboration that ought to involve far more citizens than it currently does. On reading this as a skeptical citizen, if you are skeptical of large-scale policy proposals, of federal capacity to deliver complex programs, of long-horizon projections, or of analytical frameworks developed outside credentialed academic and policy institutions, your skepticism is appropriate, and the platform is improved by it. The platform is most compelling for citizens who value universal access to healthcare and childcare, who trust federal stewardship of public purpose infrastructure given appropriate transparency and oversight, who can engage with multi-decade sovereign fund growth assumptions on their substantive merits, and who are open to wage floor mechanisms that complement rather than replace market wage setting. It is less compelling for citizens whose first commitments include strict fiscal restraint, market-only mechanisms for service delivery, or skepticism of any federal program expansion. Neither orientation is wrong. The platform represents one coherent architecture among multiple possible architectures. The honest claim is not that this platform is the right answer, but that it is a sufficiently developed answer to deserve serious evaluation rather than partisan dismissal. A reader who concludes after careful evaluation that the platform is not the right answer for their values has engaged with it at the right level. A reader who endorses every detail without critical engagement has engaged with it at too low a level. The platform's value to public discourse is in being a concrete architecture that can be criticized, refined, or rejected on substantive grounds, not in being a consensus document everyone can endorse. Closing the country is at a moment when the structures we built in the 20th century are visibly failing to produce the outcomes we want in the 21st. The conventional reform proposals from both major political coalitions have been on the table for decades and have not been enacted. Something different is required. What is offered in this document is not new in its components. Pooled retirement funding has worked in Australia for 30 years. Sovereign investment funds have worked in Norway for 35 years. Empirical wage policy has worked in Australia and Germany. Public funding of education has worked in most developed countries for most of the post-war period. The architecture is not invented. It is assembled. What may be new is the specific way these elements are assembled and the specific argument that they reinforce each other. The retirement fund makes the education fund possible. The education fund produces the workers who fund the retirement system. The wage floors ensure those workers are paid enough that the system can sustain itself. The pillars are not three separate proposals. They are one proposal expressed in three places. The proposition is that an American economy organized around pooled contribution, empirical anchoring, and transparent governance would produce shared prosperity at a scale the current structure cannot achieve. The math says this is possible. The international comparisons say this has been done. The political question, whether Americans will choose this architecture, is the open question. This document is the case for choosing it. Comments, critique, collaboration, and challenge are welcomed from any source. The technical white papers and supporting analytical models are available on request. The author will respond to substantive engagement and revise this document as warranted by the conversations it produces. Jason Robertson, Ohio, 2026. Contact information available on request. Website, see platform package README for current URL, sources, and data foundations. The numerical claims in this manifesto are drawn from public United States government data and peer-reviewed economic research. Detailed citations are not read aloud in this recording, and they are deliberately not embedded inline in the manifesto itself to keep it readable as a vision document. They are documented in full in the technical white papers and the mathematical models that accompany it, all of which are published alongside this document. The primary sources across the 12 pillars are these: Social Security Administration Trustees Reports, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, including the Occupational Employment and Wage Statistics release covering 81 occupations across 22 major groups, and the Employment Cost Index, the Bureau of Economic Analysis National Income and Product Accounts, the Census Bureau, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services National Health Expenditure Accounts, the Kaiser Family Foundation Employer Health Benefits Survey, the Congressional Budget Office and the Office of Management and Budget, the Internal Revenue Service Statistics of Income, the Department of Education and the National Center for Education Statistics, the Federal Communications Commission, the Department of Energy, and the American Society of Civil Engineers, and the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration. International comparisons draw on the Norway Government Pension Fund Global, OECD Health Statistics, the German Statutory Health Insurance System, the Quebec Child Care Program, and Australian and Singaporean retirement systems. The empirical minimum wage literature, including Card, Kruger, Dubay, Senghis, Reich, Newmark, and Washer, informs the disemployment expectations. Honest acknowledgement. The platform's data sources are public and verifiable. The interpretation, modeling assumptions, and policy design choices made on top of those sources are the author's own, Jason Robertson, with analytical support from Claude. The written version describes that collaboration in detail. Where peer-reviewed economic research is cited, minimum wage, motherhood penalty, healthcare cost containment, sovereign fund returns, the platform draws on the empirical literature without claiming novel contribution to it.